So recording on this computer, making a recording myself. And yes, there it is. Okay.
Great.
Mm-hmm.
Shall we?
Sure. Let's go. Do you introduce me?
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. It's with a great pleasure that we welcome Mr. Van Stevens, a very special guest to the second online Blue Ocean Conference. Vance has a very long history in the field with over 150 publications, and we are so much happy and excited to learn from him. Vance is going to talk about community of practices, which is a totally new idea, especially here in Syria, and we are also excited to hear from you, Vance. Thank you so much for being with us.
Okay, well, thank you very much. I'm Vance Stevens. I'm in Penang, Malaysia, where the wind is howling outside. I think I'm pretty safe here where I am. But anyway, I'd like to welcome Mr. Mike here, and Benjamin, and Sundos, and Tatiana. And if you want to speak to me, this is supposed to be a question and answer. And I just kind of put some slides together, so I guess I could talk for a good half hour if I had to. But let me just share the slides. So you can, and by the way, I put in the text chat. Can you see the link to my slides, the bit.ly link to my slides? I'll just put it there again while it's in my browser. So I highly recommend that you open those slides because it has all the links that you'll, well, it has all the links that I'm going to talk about. So you'll have a lot, and it also has a link to a poll, which we're going to start out with. So let me just share that slideshow.
Remember that the majority of people are watching and following through Facebook, so I'll be delivering any questions or
okay, results. No problem. Happy to deal with that. Okay, so anyway, this is really about the importance of learning about blended, hybrid, or e-learning through engagement in communities of practice. So communities of practice, for me, is where all learning takes place. And you learn from being in the community of practice, and you also learn from sharing with the community of practice. So, my presentation is taking up the whole screen. That's okay, it's gonna do that. And let me just show you where the slides are. I put that link in the text chat. So it's blue 2021 Vance. It's a bit.ly link. So if you go to bit.ly and / blue 2021 Vance, you can follow this presentation. So I highly recommend that you get that. And the link is on the next slide as well, here at the bottom. Did you get the slides? Okay, if you got the slides, you can click on this link at the top, which is the polleverywhere.com link. So Safwan mentioned that he wasn't sure. He said this might be a new topic to people in Syria. So let's see. So if you go to pollev.com/VanceStevens602, that's an arbitrarily assigned number, then let's see what we can do there. If you need that link again, hang on a minute. Let me just, I'll see if I can get that link. Copy the link. It's not giving it to me. Okay, let me just, does anybody need the link? That'll get, that's the link address right there. Okay, I'm gonna put the link address to the poll everywhere in the text chat.
Yeah, that would help.
Yes, okay, so if you can go to that, that's a lot easier. Always more than one way to do things. Okay, so I'm trying to, I'm trying to exit my presentation. It was easy to do by accident a second ago, but there we go, I got it. Okay, so what I want to show you here is the survey. So I'm going to activate the survey, and that will allow you to answer questions. So there are four questions, and you can just scroll down. They're all on one page, so you can just scroll down and get the questions. And so the first question is, are you familiar with the term communities of practice? Yes, very familiar. you've heard the term, but you're not really sure about it or know. You don't really know what communities of practice are. So if you could answer those questions, the next question will be, do you consider yourself a member of a community of practice? Yes, definitely, or not sure, or no, you don't. And two more questions. The next to last is, how many communities of practice do you consider yourself a member of? Either none, maybe a couple, one to three, or a few, say less than a dozen, or dozens. So how would you answer those? Is everybody able to, did I activate the link? I tried to do it. Okay.
Oh, you restarted the link.
I restarted it. Yeah, I'm sorry. Did I restart it?
Well, waiting presentation is underway. As soon as activity is active, you haven't activated the activity.
Here it I'm comes. Activating yes. it now. I keep hitting that active. So let's see. Do I have to present this to do it? Okay. Let me see if I present. And I haven't activated. This is
you have, but you're turning it off. So just leave it there.
And okay. Here we go. All right. Good. Thank you.
Yeah.
Always need feedback.
Cool.
So let's see now. So, okay, so I can scroll through the answers and see what people know about the topic already. Okay, so I guess someone will be answering the first. Are you able to answer the first question? If it's not working, it's, there yes. we go. Okay. Someone answered. All right, good. It's working. Okay, so I'll skip on to the next one just to see if someone answers that one. Yes, there are answers to that one. And there's answers to the fourth one. And the fifth one says, what's your favorite community practice? Okay, so we have...
Broken up into words.
Hmm?
The statement got broken up into words. Yes. Mine was Minecraft Academy with Rose Bard.
Oh, okay. That's good to know. Minecraft Academy with Rose Bard.
It's totally new.
Okay. Classroom, come experience, emergent. I don't know. Okay. Well, anyway, let me go back and just pick up, see what people are answering here. So let's see. On the first question, I'm not sure how many people have answered. Okay, but all of the people have said they're very familiar with communities of practice. And if we go on, are you a member of a community practice? Someone is not sure. Okay, we're going to address that in the next slide. And how many are you a member of? Okay, one or two so far. All of the answers are there. Okay, so let me, all right, so these are, so if I go back one more time, I'm not going to dwell too long on this, but is anybody want to answer still, or we, maybe I've illustrated all that I can.
Yeah, here I received many answers from people in CRSA. They never heard of it.
Oh, okay, but will they answer in the poll, or?
They didn't put the answers in the poll.
Uh-huh. Oh, okay. So some people are...
Yeah. I suggest here in the first one, yes, not that familiar with it, and yes, very familiar with it. I was looking for a yes, but not that really familiar with, you know,
that would be maybe
characteristics of communities of practice.
Uh-huh. Well, you might want to answer not sure, or choose one. You just have to choose one because... So apparently two people have answered this question.
Cool.
And at some point we're going to, okay, so are you a member? One person is definitely a member. How do you know you're a member? Because a community of practice is very informal. It's not like you sign up for it. It's just sort of there. How do you know you're a member?
You want me to answer, yeah?
Sure.
You.
Okay.
I don't want to be that nerdy student that always gets their hand up, but it's good to have a conversation with you, Vance, yeah?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Because this is just something that I stumbled reading a white paper from Microsoft.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know of community of practice as a term from Wetger, is that right? Wetger and
Wenger, Wenger.
Mm-hmm. And basically what struck me was recently that I was reading about it and I started investigating and looking into it was that there is, it is informal, obviously, but there is a rigid structure there, yeah? Like with a leader and a focus and some tasks. So just recently with one or two, like I said, cops that I've been involved in, is I can see the differences because they explicitly said this is going to be a community of practice approach.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, it's kind of Wenger is kind of the authority on communities of practice. He wrote the books. So he was hired by Xerox to figure out how they could leverage their what the Japanese were doing in their plants, and he saw they were using the community of practice approach, and he informed Xerox of what they were doing, made a lot of money doing that, and then he's kind of gotten he wrote some books about it. So basically, this is Etienne Wenger. Webheads is one of my communities in practice. I started that started the teachers one in 2001. 2002. And I started it as an EVO, Electronic Village Online session. And in 2005, 2007, and 2009, we had some things we called Webheads in Action Online Convergences. And the reason we held these convergences was there were a lot of conferences coming on at the time, but you had to put a credit card down on them. They weren't free. And there really was nothing. I thought that Webheads could actually put one on for free, and that's what we did. And the one in 2007, we had Etienne Wenger come out, and he came online and he talked to us. And Christina Costa, I don't know if you know Christina Costa, but before she was a PhD, successful PhD, she spoke to Etienne, and they were talking about communities in practice. He said, "How did you know you were in a community of practice?" And she said, "When I saw my practice had changed." See, that's the straight A answer right there. That's what you're supposed to say. And that's really, communities of practice should result in some change in practice. Okay, so if as a result of interacting with people, you change your practice, then quite possibly you are in a community of practice. And this link down here will take you back to other Webheads in Action Online Convergences. And that's the slide where this comes from. Okay, it's a slide on PLNs. So if you want to explore more, you can always do that in my slideshows. So characteristics of COPs, actually we looked at them over here. There's a domain, there's a community, and a practice. So these are Wenger's terms, how you define communities of practice. The domain is the thing that you are talking about. So for example, we're language teachers. That's our domain. We're interested in things associated with language teaching, maybe technology. We have a community. Zafuan has a web page, a Facebook page, and that's a community. He's starting a community there. You're starting relationships building. Obviously, Mike and I know each other. And because we work through Electronic Village Online. And the practice is the things that you, that's what changed, what Christina said when her practice changed. This is the things that you do within that domain. So when, it's those things right there. And so Etienne Wenger wrote books about these things. There's knowledge is promoted in a domain, they revolve around practice. And the communities also have other aspects. And one of them is that they spontaneously or voluntarily form. It's kind of hard to start one. That's what I was asking Mike. He said that some people said they were gonna use that approach. Yeah, it's an approach, okay. But to really form a community of practice, the people have to be there because they're really getting keen on that. And it has particularly defined community spaces in which they interact. Okay, in Webheads in Action, those spaces are all over the board. You might even say EVO, they're all over the board. So we're going to look a little bit about how that works. So we have groups, communities of practice, and networks. So networks are kind of by definition connectivist. That is, they people interact with each other. And they can be called PLNs, personal learning networks, or distributed learning networks. Those are ones that are online as opposed to ones that are maybe you do by the mail or something like that. And rhizomatic learning is something that Dave Cormier has been promoting. I'm not sure if you've heard of that. It's irrelevant to this talk. But let's look and see how those things work. So a group is any group of people. We could say we're a group right now. We're grouped here in this Zoom room. And if we meet with other groups, we would form a community. So for example, if you live, there are four people in your house, and next door there's four more people in the house over there, they're in a community. They call them a community. And a community of practice is when these people have things in common. They interact, they're there because they're interested in the same domain. The connections with each other, they're forming social connections, and they are engaged in the same practice. So networks now makes things kind of interesting. Networks can have overlapping communities. So you see there's three communities there, and they all overlap in the middle. And then I've sort of set the diagram where two of them might overlap. So what this looks like is you might have people in the different communities might interact with each other. For example, Mike might be in a flipped learning community, a community of practice perhaps. And I might be in Minecraft. I play Minecraft. So Mike is actually interacted with us in Minecraft sometimes. So yeah. You might say that I'm in this community, he's in this one, and sometimes he interacts with us in the Minecraft community. Now, people in any node, each of these gray things is called a node. Any node in the community is liable to be interacting with a node in another community. So this is your network. And Stephen Downs says that each node in the network is as knowledgeable as the most knowledgeable node in the network. What that means is if you want some information, like today I was trying to find out how many people you can get on a Minecraft server, which is not just a straightforward answer. It depends on RAM, it depends on lots of things, on the CPU. So anyway, I just put that out in our Discord network, and Aaron came back and answered me. Okay, so he's knowledgeable. I'm in contact with Aaron. And so I can get information somewhere in it could be someone in another community, though. It could be someone else could have answered that question. But what this means is that this guy right here is as knowledgeable as this person over here because they have access to the same information. As Siemens used to say, that the pipes are more important than the content. What that means is that your network connections are more important than the content in the pipes. Pipes can have content, but if you can't get at that content, then your pipes or your connections need to be revised. So as long as you have connections to other networks, other communities, then you are theoretically as knowledgeable as the most knowledgeable person in that network. So I've written a bit about autonomy. And what that means is autonomy, let's see. Autonomy is when people have a learning strategy that directs them toward something they want to learn. They develop it themselves so that they're autonomous. And teachers who agree that learner autonomy is something that should be encouraged and developed in students should see the need to cultivate autonomy in themselves. So teachers have to be autonomous in order to get their students to be autonomous. Often in PD situations, professional development situations, sometimes they don't work so well because they might be driven top down. They don't really address teacher needs. Someone puts them on for an excuse for something else. They don't necessarily lead to development. People just have to go there and sit through them. but teachers who drive their own professional development through participation in learning communities and PLNs, personal learning networks, are constantly expressing and assessing each other's needs, promoting professional development on an as-needed basis. So once you are familiar with and comfortable in this style of learning, then your students, you'll apply it to your students. So as Mike said, they're going to use a community of practice approach. Well, okay, so they're modeling a community of practice approach. So this to me is the relationship between communities of practice and the practice itself. Can you hear the thunder?
Yes. There's that.
Okay, so an autonomous learner is one who self-starts him or herself. Oh, and by the way, I've got, if you want to read more about these things, it's coming from my blog posts, or this one over here is coming from something I published in Learning Independence newsletter, and I also wrote a blog post here about it. So these are just quotes from these posts. If you want to read the rest of the posts, you can. So an autonomous learner self-starts him or herself in the direction of a learning strategy, which probably is going to be centered around a learning community these days. So therefore, learning strategies leading to community and network building might be productive in producing autonomous learners, some of whom also work as teachers. So just because you're a learner, don't forget to include yourself. Okay, teachers are also learning. Any questions so far?
There was one about the meaning of PLN.
Personal Learning Network.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That's huge. You want to touch on that? I think that's a huge topic, which you should talk about. What is a PLN and why have it, maybe? You know, the professionalism of a teacher connecting with other teachers. It's especially in the pandemic with a lot of online stuff. Connecting with other teachers is, you know, was and is huge. And mm-hmm. because of the pressure to perform digitally, like Vance, it's easy for, you know, well, I shouldn't say that. But Vance been doing it for, you know, many years. So you have a teacher of a physical classroom with little or no connection to the internet, all of a sudden have this huge burden to take on, you know, whatever the context is, 10, 15, 20, 30 kids plus, and have them all online was huge.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the ways, because, you know, governments didn't catch on, no government didn't catch on, or governing body, I should say. And one of the ways teachers survived was connecting to each other and learning from each other.
Yes, right.
And exactly. Having the right, you know, teachers connected to you on maybe social media, maybe just a Facebook or Twitter or whatever you use, is invaluable. You should, if you just use it to look at, you know, family connections, make an account as a teacher and connect with other teachers. And you'll see how everything just connects and you learn. Yeah. And obviously Blue Ocean knows that. And that's why he's doing this tremendous effort to
as a good example.
Yes, he's
using his personal learning network to connect to all these teachers, are bringing some outstanding presentations into his context. So he's a very good example of that.
Yeah.
So anyhow, these next three slides are from this presentation. Let's see, it's over here. It's from my flipped learning workshops in Thailand. I just took three slides from that. They'll come in a minute right here. These three slides, they were also from my workshops. My workshops in Thailand. So I took those and I put them here. And these are, and I'm having trouble getting back to the presentation. I guess it doesn't really matter. Okay, so anyhow, oh, I know what I have to do. I have to move on like there. There we go. Okay, that'll go forward, go back. That puts me back in the presentation. So I gave a plenary address in Egypt in 2004, some long time ago, in which I said, there is no such thing as a language teacher. There are only language learners. What do you think about that? Is there such a thing as a language teacher? I mean, we all have jobs as language teachers, but are you really, can you really teach a language? Is it possible?
Yes, I believe.
Okay, let me just quibble with that. You can probably train language, but as you're giving people a test, if you want people to learn verb conjugations and you can sort of grill them in it, they'll do well on the test. But as far as going outside that context into the real world, they're probably not learning a lot about the language. They have to learn, they have mechanisms in their head that help them learn languages. And they're, this is just to be provocative. I'm not going to stand by this, but I'm saying that there are only language learners. Language has to be learned. It can't really be taught. You can facilitate the teaching. As a teacher, you're a facilitator. But I'll look at some other people's perspectives on this. This guy is named Stephen Downs at another Webheads in Action Online Convergences. He came and talked to us. I don't know if you've heard of Stephen Downs. Let's see if he's got, these slides don't go. That link is broken. I just noticed it earlier. Okay, so he said that a teacher models and demonstrates and a learner practices and reflects. Is that what teachers do? Do they model and demonstrate, and do learners practice and reflect? Do you agree with that?
Well, one of the teacher's part is to model and to show and demonstrate and then to create the environment, which will help learners, you know, facilitating, you know, the learners to practice and take in.
Would you ever have students model and demonstrate, or do you practice and reflect?
Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah. Who does what? It's a bit hazy. Yeah, keep going.
Okay. Well, this is David Warlick's concept of a master learner, which he wrote about in this blog post. You can read it if you want, in 2010. And he said he tried to present himself as a master learner, suggesting that part of what teachers should be today is constant and resourceful learners. The idea of a master learner is that you're not a teacher. It's kind of like apprenticing. Once you become an apprentice learner and do it so well to the point that you can actually be hired to teach, you're actually teaching people how to learn. That's what you should be doing anyway. So that's why I say that there's no such thing as a language teacher, just master learners, maybe. But in order to become proficient in the language or to communicate with others, you have to learn the language yourself. Stephen says, teachers model and demonstrate, learners practice and reflect. So if you take this schematic, the master learner in Warlick's scheme, master learners model, demonstrate, practice, and reflect. It's percolation. They're always demonstrating, reflecting on that, changing things, you know, so they're always learning. So that's a concept that's been with me for quite a long time. And then getting to your point, Mike, where when teachers were put in the situation where they had to get in and start teaching, my courses in Thailand finished up in an e-learning course, and this is from the e-learning course. One of the people in the course said, I wouldn't even know where to begin teaching my classes online this semester. I'm hearing myself on an echo, by the way. I thought someone was talking to me. Okay, so anyway, maybe other people have headphones or maybe mute your mic if you're not talking. Yeah, because it's coming back to me and it's confusing me a little bit. Maybe, or can we mute people who are
Saffron, not speaking? Maybe we can mute everybody.
Yeah. Mona is still, let's see, it's still happening. Yep, must be Mona. Hate to point, embarrass anybody. Okay, so anyhow, this guy down here is Jeff LeBeau. And Jeff is someone I've been interacting with for a long time. I'm going to have to fix that echo problem. Let me see if I can get into the Zoom. And if I go into Zoom, stop the share. Okay, there we go. So this one right here, let's see, Mona. Let's see if we can. Okay, she doesn't have a mic showing. Okay. Anyway, well, maybe it's not her. It could only be Safwan.
It's not me at all.
No, okay. Well, okay, so they're only, we're only showing. Oh, wait, stop now. No, that's
all right.
Okay, anyway, enough troubleshooting. We're just going to have to deal with it. The heck with it. Okay, so let me get back into share. Sorry about that little aside. Okay, so I was talking about Jeff LeBeau, one of my colleagues who I've been interacting with for a long time. Jeff came to my e-learning course, and he showed us. He's very good. He's like he's very experienced at. He was long time experienced in blended learning and going online with teachers, and he had so much experience with that when he went to Korea and was teaching there. He had just set things up in a blog, and the way he had done it in the blog was all these little orange things are tabs in the blog, and they each have to do with some course component. The echo has stopped, by the way. Okay, so he was head of his department. So what this meant was that for his teachers, he was able to put them into the system. So he said, if you can listen to his recording, he said that they were able to easily seg into this emergency remote teaching phase and just add Zoom is all he said. But that's a little simplistic. But in any event, by having the experience of doing it, you are then able to, sorry, now I got to get out of this thing. Okay, so there we go. Okay. Okay, so that having the experience of doing it makes it much easier to actually do it yourself, and you're not so much in that position of having to figure it out. So anyway, getting into my own communities of practice, the one I started in 1998 with students, we had the students we called it Writing for Webheads, and that attracted teachers who started joining us and coming online and audio and using some of the tools we were using back then. There's this webheads.info is where you can learn all about webheads. And so there's Writing for Webheads, for example, where you can see the students who are in the Writing for Webheads. They're still there. Our Webheads and Action Online Convergences are up here somewhere. That's it right there. Okay, so you can learn about the three Webheads and Action Online Convergences. Anything you want to know about Webheads is all there. And also some of the things we've written about them. For example, what I'm showing you right now, there's an article about Webheads. It's an encyclopedia article, which I'm kind of proud of. So if you want to read more about that, you can go to the encyclopedia there, and there's my article here. It's up on my website. Okay, a better one though, where I really explain how the parts fit together, is a chapter that I wrote for computer-assisted language learning for APICAL, John Besson. Let me just have a look at that one right there. So if you open it up and go down to where the article is, you can see that I address a lot of these issues and explain how they come together. For example, let's see, Writing for Webheads, how that got started, how we learned how to make autonomous learners, how to develop skills that we were able to bring into even higher and higher accomplishments. So Webheads in Action, there's something on personal learning networks right there. Learning via communities of practice and personal learning networks. If you want more information about that, you can read that. And the ineffable nature of connectivist learning. Ineffable means you can't really describe it. You have to do it. Ineffable is something that you, okay. If you don't know the term. Anyway, it describes something that, like playing Minecraft, is not something you can understand how it could help your students until you do it. And Webheads and Action Online Convergence, some of the other EVO sessions that I was doing at the time. So all these things, they're described there in this article. Okay, so web as an action happened three times. It drove me crazy. It was kind of a three-day, 76-hour straight event. Didn't really sleep very well. It was so difficult that I decided in 2010 that I would do it. I'm going to let Anna in. Can I do that? Because you're on my screen. Okay, so there were, since 2010, I changed this into Learning Together, which was more, not just a conference, but weekly podcasts. And you can see all the podcasts here. This is an index of all the podcasts that we've done. So if you, they're all listed there, they're all recorded. So all 510 of them now, you can get them all right there. And now I'm going to start talking about how this fits into communities of practice, because Learning Together is one of my communities of practice. That's the link for it, learningtogether.pbworks.com. And what this does is it gives you events that are coming up. So if you want to join events that are coming up, you can see what's happening in my communities of practice, in my Learning Together community of practice. So on the 1st of May, David Wiley is going to talk. He's a very interesting speaker. Anyway, so you can find out more things that are happening, and you can become involved with some of the people who are doing those things. Okay, so that's the next topic, is how can you get involved in communities of practice? So Learning Together has a Facebook group as well. People are starting to post in the Facebook group, like Hannah Chamis posted this, and just below that, Faisal al-Shamali in Oman. And this is just a set of events that people posted about. And so it's just an example of how people are using the community of practice to kind of inform each other about things that are coming up. WebEds in Action does pretty much the same thing. It's also a Facebook group. It's probably the most active part of WebEds in Action right now. Let's see if other people are there. There's somebody posting about Selby Evans, I think is his name. He's posting about, there's Hannah again. He's posting about virtual worlds. So there's Selby, he posts a lot about virtual worlds events. Electronic Village Online, though, that's one that's the most important one, I think. Electronic Village Online, let's see. I've been a coordinator since 2003. I mentioned that I'd started WebEds in Action in 2002. And then in 2003, they asked me to be a coordinator. And I wrote this article here about autonomy meets Electronic Village Online. That's just an article that touches on some of the things I've been talking about already. And then Elizabeth Hanson-Smith and Christine Bauer-Ramazzani, two of the original coordinators, wrote an article in 2004 where they described sort of how EVO was formed, Electronic Village Online. So, and by the way, we're in our 20th anniversary now. And if you want to learn more about it, you can go to EVO Sessions, which is evosessions.pbworks.com. And the next thing we're going to do is put out a call for proposals in July. And so we'll start the next cycle of Electronic Village Online sessions that happen every year from January and February. Okay, so it's a community of practice at work. This is, you can read in two places about this, what happened in 2020, and that is the TESOL conference was canceled in 2020. It was supposed to be in Denver. We had already, because modeling how if you do things in a certain way, you know, if you do things online, if you work in this blended learning way, if you're working through communities, what we were doing was at TESOL conferences. We were 10 years ago, we were holding the Electronic Village Online sessions, where a few of the moderators came to the conferences and spoke. And then we started moving in, I think, 2016 and 17. We had the best at Electronic Village Online, where we tried to get the people who came to the conference would speak physically at the conference about what they were doing. In 2018, they decided to move the Electronic Village down to the exhibition hall. And so they wanted a lot bigger event, more people there, and they also increased the time. But the trouble was, this is in 2018, the economy is starting to pinch, people aren't really traveling, people who are doing courses online, are they do everything online, they're not really relying on being in physical spaces. So they didn't come, you know, we only had four or five people who were actually moderators there. And so to compensate for that, I decided to, we had been streaming what we do out to the world at large from our Electronic Village Online. This is the part of TESOL conferences where CalIS has events that are kind of separate from the main conference. So in 2018 and 2019, we couldn't get enough people to fill all the time they had allocated to us, so on site. So we decided to bring them in from online. So we organized in a Google Doc the presentations that would happen. Some of them happened on site. People just signed up for the slots. Other people came from online, and we put together, we had audiences sitting there listening. Someone was standing up at the podium speaking, that's one thing, or they could see it on the screen. So audiences seem to tolerate this quite well. That brings us up to 2020, when all of us, we set up the same event, but all of a sudden the conference was canceled. But we didn't cancel, we went ahead and put it online. So we did it entirely online. And the significant thing here is that we did it not only just had a separate event, but we had it at about the time that it would have been done in the conference. So in other words, we didn't hardly skip a beat. We put on the event because we had already been doing that kind of thing. So I think we were probably the only session at the TESOL conference who was able to do that, who was able to actually put on their presentation. And then the last one, 2021, I'm getting messed up here. Okay, there we go. There's my slides. Okay, so so that's a community practice at work, but we're quite often at play. I've been, for the last 7 years, moderating something called EVO Minecraft MOOC. And this is play and work. Minecraft is one of the things that it's really hard, it's almost impossible to do without a community. I mean, you can do it, you can get the software and you can run the software, but you can't really understand how it can lead to communication among language learners until you get online with a community. And that also you'll progress in the game a lot faster than if you try to do it by yourself. So I started EVO Minecraft MOOC in 2015 when I didn't know how to play Minecraft. I just wanted to be taught, or I wanted to learn, put it that way, like a language learner. I had to put myself in a position where I could learn. So I gathered together some experts and we taught each other how to play Minecraft. And 7 years later, I'm sort of in the position where I can teach other people. So at the TESOL 2021 conference, there's some videos you can watch about what they tell you is that in Minecraft, let me just pop back over here, let's see. Okay, if I go to, that's our portal page for EVO Minecraft MOOC. There is, what we do is we record live events. And so these are some of the live events we recorded, so a couple dozen of them. And like, for example, Dakota Redstone, one of our moderators, took us off into what's called the End. And it's a very dangerous place, but as a community, you can go there and you can survive it and you can succeed in getting the Dragon's Head or whatever it is you're looking for. So What I did was I drew up a set of affordances that I thought Minecraft gave to language learners. I extracted 13 video snippets and I put them into these into this video. So I have a lot of documentation explaining how the snippets, examples from the snippets from the 13 videos from all the couple dozen videos I made, taking parts of those out that show you how people can learn languages through them. Okay, whoops. Sorry about that. Okay, now then, I'm kind of done. I have a Padlet here. Let's see if I can get its link. I'll put the link in the text chat. If you would like to write on the tablet, on the Padlet, you can, you'll find there's a little plus bar. Once you mouse over the plus bar, it turns into an editing pen. But if you hit the plus bar, you can write down anything you'd like to tell us about communities of practice. And that's where I plan to let you write there. And I will find the text chat. Where's my text chat? Here it is. Okay. Too many windows open. Oh, I need to stop sharing. Okay, so there we go. So in the text chat, here's the Padlet. Padlets are very nice tools for just getting people to reflect on what you've been talking about. I'm going to bring it up here. If I notice that anybody is writing in it, I will show it to everybody. My Padlet is up now. So at the moment, I'm not expecting everybody to rush to it. But if you're doing flipped learning, I don't know, Mike, you probably use Padlets in flipped learning. This is a good ways to get people to consolidate and reflect on your own. Somebody's there. Benjamin is there. Okay. Yep. How do you reconcile community goals with individual goals within a COP approach? That's a good question. How do you community goal? Well, you know, the because they're put on by people who are sharing the same practice and ostensibly going for the same goals, they are the same. Community goal, individual goals are community goals. So let me go ahead and share this since it's becoming kind of productive. Okay, let's see. There we go. Lots of screens to manipulate here. Okay, now there's the Padlet that I started. So here we have, Mike says, I feel communities, the COPs are a great way to learn from peers. Sometimes the content, he's not finished yet. Okay, so no, it worked that way. So yeah, how do you reconcile community goals with individual goals within a COP? They really shouldn't diverge. All my COPs, you know, there is a question. You know, Webheads is well known because it takes a cat herding approach. I'm a cat herder. No one has an agenda. People have remarked on that. So if you get people in the community who have agendas, you might find that individuals aren't really on someone's agenda goals. But if things are left for people to work organically, I think people take from a community of practice what will benefit them. And two people can have different goals and still take the same thing from the community of practice. Okay. Is any affiliation between CSL theory and other round rule like ITA is COP? Okay. I'm not sure what the too many acronyms there. Is any affiliation between TESOL Syria and others around the world like ITA, is a COP? That's a good question. You know, well, I mean, what you're asking is, are any of the things that you already do a COP? I'm not sure what ITA is, but maybe someone could explain it to us.
The International TESOL Association.
I see. I'd never seen that acronym before, although I know they changed their name. Okay. Yeah. Well, ITA has what they call COPs. They try to organize around COPs. You could say that the intersections are often COPs. I would say that the Cal-IS intersection is definitely a COP because the people there seem pretty focused on the same domain, the same goals within that domain, the same practice. So, and they also, and they're very community-based. So let's see. I don't know, Mike, do you want to talk to us about what you've written here?
Yeah, sure. Basically, I say that sometimes the content of a COP can be so overwhelming, and I prefer, if I'm involved in the COP, if there's some sort of a leader or someone who is leading the focus group or the focus of the content and breaking it down into like bite-sized chunks and maybe a task and a reflection stage. So that way you're all involved, because, you know, I have a language school and I've got something like 10 teachers, and having a Facebook group or a Messenger group sometimes, if there's no task involved, it's even difficult getting your teachers just to like maybe a link you've put on this Facebook group. But if they know that community practice and this is a task, we're talking about maybe vocabulary notebooks, or we're talking about different ways we're going to do something in our school, and you break the ideas down and you get everyone reflecting and participating, it's more productive.
Yeah, COPs, I think the impetus should come from the people. I don't know, are you thinking about a MOOC? Some of the things you said might pertain to a MOOC, which is a course that's has no centers.
Are EVO sessions considered MOOCs?
Well, yeah, you know, we say that. I say that. I think they're MOOCs. They're massive. They have hundreds of people in them. Or, you know, I also have another term I call minuscule open online course. So it could be a minuscule open online course. Same dynamics.
Yeah.
But basically, you want enough people in the MOOC that it's kind of like having a party. If you only invite a few people, half of them show up, it's not much of a party. If you invite the whole neighborhood, you know, a third of them show up, you're going to have a wild party. So,
but in a party, they're all participating. In a MOOC, there's, you know, you could have like 180 participants and only get, you know, 3 tasks done, or, you know, 10 tasks. Yeah. Or from this, the Padlet, we've got, you know, quite a few participants on Facebook and what have you, but we've only got 2 posts.
But they're stimulating discussion. And, yep. And also, you know, a lot of people join MOOCs, but don't really do anything. I mean, I lurk in a lot of MOOCs, and I've probably joined 10 times, 50 times as many MOOCs as I've actually participated in, you know, just to see what they're doing, or I'll get into a MOOC for long enough to where I think I've learned what I want to learn, and then I move on to something else.
Yeah.
So, but that's normal. It's been said that, you know, if you put on a university course and you might get, say, 20 people signed up for it, and you might get 10 people out the other side. If you put on a MOOC and you get 100 people, you're likely to get 20 people out the other side. So, the scale means that it's productive, and so MOOCs can be very. The reason I thought you might be thinking about MOOCs was because they also lack center. MOOCs can be very confusing. There's so many things going on, or even participants will create spaces for the MOOC to interact in. So they're not really controlled very well, and they're sort of meant to be like that. But communities of practice, I think, are not really necessarily task-based. They're for people to learn through. A MOOC is a massive open online course. It's a course. That means that there are tasks. So you should do things there. A community of practice is a community of people who might not have tasks, but they're learning and they're sharing the knowledge. So they may not have tasks. They may not do it through tasks. They may just post to Facebook, or, you know what I mean? There's they enjoy interacting with each other because they're learning from each other. So
yeah, but in in a community practice, they don't.
They don't. You mean if you set up a community practice, they're not learning from each other?
Yeah, I'm a bit hazy because for me, community practice is something that I picked up really recently.
Uh-huh.
But I have been maybe involved in that's why I only said one or two.
Uh-huh.
Because they've been branded maybe community of practice, and, and I'm understanding that it's focused, like I'm in a ludic language pedagogy comp. Yeah, okay. And it's very focused, and we read a lot of papers and we talk about them, and just that could that the discussions could go anywhere on a Discord server. But and I always feel that it's focus, and when it gets unfocused, you move on. That's why I'm a bit hazy with the term.
Well, you take something like webheads as a community practice. I mean, there's never been any tasks to do. People just like to get together and talk about things, and they ask questions to the group and they help each other. So community practice is something that's voluntary. You shouldn't feel that you're having to do something in a COP. You know, whereas if you're trying to get through a course or a MOOC, then they might give you a certificate at the end if you accomplish tasks. But if you're trying to keep up that kind of pressure, it doesn't sound like it's going to go for very long, or there must be an end to it.
I agree. Yeah. So.
I mean, if you're really,
it's more of the community practice, more of, you know, a group of people, same passion, same beliefs, maybe, and they learn from interacting and sharing and reflecting. Yeah, something like the social nature of learning, maybe. Yeah.
Yeah, they meet together, and they have each other, and they utilize each other by sharing with one another, learning from one another. They might address a particular problem. Someone might have a problem. My school just closed. What do I do now? You know. You'd never set up a thing to read about schools closing. Although people might share that kind of stuff. You know. So, but you would. It's more just in time and more based on people's needs. Based on any pressure or obligation to do something, that would be how. But you could be redefining it. I don't know. Wenger has very particular criteria for communities of practice, and so those three are simplified, but then he gets much deeper into them in his books.
It's been long. It's quite funny because I picked up even though I've seen a lot of your content and we've talked together quite a bit of times, and I've attended a few webhead sessions as well. I really didn't pick up on the term, community of practice.
Mm-hmm.
And it's quite funny because I found it just recently in a white paper from Microsoft,
mm-hmm.
Transformational Framework, Learning Communities and Support.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, learning communities offer a power. Maybe I can share because it's a shareable document.
Mm-hmm. You want to share a screen?
Give me a sec. I can share the paper. Maybe someone can read it. And basically, the thing I call learning communities and support. Learning communities offer a powerful strategy for supporting teacher professional development. Blah blah blah. As an organizational structure, they share a collective responsibilities for the growth and development of all members in the school and schooling system. So structuring, bringing together, blah blah blah, and bringing together maybe teachers and maybe even the community and students through a community of practice. Do you think that's feasible? Is my question.
Where are you reading? What page?
No, because.
Maybe I can share it.
Sure. Learning communities and support. Give me a sec.
Are we violating any time frame here?
we are.
I hope not.
Oh, just after the introduction.
Okay.
Second paragraph, yeah?
For second. Here? This page?
Yeah, right there.
Uh-huh. Learning communities.
Well, there you go. Learning communities, yeah? Not yeah?
Yeah, maybe not communities of practice. Communities of practice is a very particular term that Wenger developed. You know,
they actually do go and they reference Wenger.
I think down here, what's the community of practice? Educational theories, et cetera. Etienne Wenger suggests that a school must be more than a place of instruction, it must be a place of inquiry, a place that produces knowledge, transmits knowledge. Okay, designed with the intention of helping members systematically understand and improve their own practice. Yet, what a learning community looks like and how it functions is dependent on the community members' intentions, the design structure of the community, and the activity that takes place among the community members. And I would think that community members drive that in a community practice. So it wouldn't be something you could implement top down.
Yeah.
So, you know, and you wouldn't be able to sustain it if you did, because, you know, so community practice should be something that is sustainable.
Yeah. I see what you mean. Yeah. And the way, so there's a difference between, you know, communities of learning and communities of practice, mate. Learning community, sorry, and community of inquiry. So actually, that's it. Okay, cool.
Community of inquiry, that's Garrison, the social presence, the teacher presence, et cetera.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
All right. Well, thank you very much. Okay. Should we make some kind of big wave and smile and take a screenshot or something? Oh, no. Hang on a minute. I was just about to hang on. There we go. Okay, got it. Okay. So, all right. Thanks for coming, everybody. Appreciate it. Yay. See some hands. Yay. Okay. All at once. One more time, step one. Yes. Hey. Okay, we got three hands. All right. Okay, great.
Cool.
Okay.
Right, Vance, if it's possible, I received two questions.
Mm-hmm.
The first one is asking about how can teachers be lifelong learners? Or the other one actually is clearer, asking about how can teachers be autonomous?
Yeah, mentioned lots of articles that I've written where I address these things, but those are questions kind of get at they're hard to answer, but let's see if we can try. Okay. So the first question, how do you become autonomous? Kind of what Mike is talking about, where he's into this ludic group. It's not autonomy means that you want to learn about this and you go and you find things. And whereas they're sort of coming top down on you, read this, read that, you know, so that's kind of counter to autonomy, isn't it? So autonomy is where I think it said in one of the slides I quoted that it's where someone gets a strategy to where they find a way that they can learn. So autonomy is where you develop a strategy for learning, and then because you want to learn it, whether it's another language, or it could be, I'm sure probably in your practice, you've probably learned a lot of things that people didn't really teach you. So if there's a gap in your knowledge and you want to fill that gap, then if you go and try to do that, that's autonomy. And it said in the quote that I'm thinking of in my slide presentation also that's going to involve a community somewhere, a personal learning network, probably these days. It's hard to learn on your own. So you need a support group, a support community to help you with that autonomy, to develop that autonomy. But it's something that has to come from within. What was the other topic? Autonomy and what else?
I think it's very much related. Yeah, about how teachers can be learners.
Benji, lifelong learners. Nice comments on that.
Yeah, lifelong learners. Yes, well, that's actually what David Warlick was talking about, you know, teachers teachers model and demonstrate, and learners practice and reflect. But if you are a lifelong learner, you're doing all of those things. So your reflection could be keeping a blog post or something like that, or keeping a blog, or going to conferences, doing presentations. You're obviously reflecting on your practice if you do that. Teaching other people how to do things in professional development groups or in your community of practice. These are all reflective practices, helping people to learn. So if you are in that kind of thing, if you enjoy that, you're a lifelong learner in this day and age. If you're not a lifelong learner, you'd have left technology would have left you behind some time ago. So you have to keep learning. And if you keep that up to the end of your life, then you're a lifelong learner. You've got a ways to go, Stefan.
Thank you so much. And I believe, Vance, there is a comment on the chat box by.
Okay, I have to bring it up here. All right. Where does it begin? Thank you, Vance, for a great talk. To be autonomous, perhaps in your PLN, are those you? Someone want to come on and articulate this, what they want to say? Sometimes it's easier if I read it. This was
Benjamin.
Yeah, Vance. Yeah, mm-hmm. Just wanted to thank you for the talk. It was very informative. Like to see what all you're doing. And it's been a while since I've been following you. I've been with doing some other stuff, but
I've just twigged on who you are. Your face is coming very clear now. Yeah, cool. All right. So nice to see you again.
Uh-huh. One of the things that I think about when I regarding the question about autonomous learning is just the personal learning network. And I think this falls into your talk on communities of practice, where you're really thinking about your own personal goals, building your relationships with other colleagues, maybe colleagues that you work with face to face. Maybe these are colleagues that you're connecting with outside of your workplace, much like what we're doing here, and really thinking about how you maneuver and leverage your network. That is, those that you build relationships with, the ideas, the concepts, the personal goals that you want to set for yourself, and then manage that personal learning network through, let's say, a communities of practice or not. Maybe it's just a more of a individual pursuit that doesn't fall within the principles of a communities of practice. So I think the idea of being an autonomous learner, especially as a teacher, that's very important. And as you mentioned, knowing how to be a good learner is where it's at, you know, in terms of how we demonstrate and help our learners do take on those same ideas and practices, perhaps. But it's really just trying to find what works for you and looking at a personal learning network as constantly changing as you're developing and learning yourself, and just taking that responsibility of making those decisions about reaching out, finding communities like you're offering here, and reaching out and connecting with others and sharing your experiences, and just do those practices that help you learn. For me, that's where it's at in terms of just how I view becoming a lifelong learner or developing a personal learning network. So I've done a lot of research on PLNs, and I did my dissertation on that. For me, the personal learning network, even though it's been kind of an old term now, it's been around, I still feel it's very relevant in how we view our own personal development and professional development. But again, and thanks for the talk. I really do appreciate the time and everyone's participation and insights. So thanks.
Yeah, well, thank you. Thank you for coming. Really appreciate that. So you put it very nicely there. If you have anything we can read, you can put it in the text chat.
All right. So thank you very, very much, Vance. That was quite informative. And to be honest, you just made me reconsider the whole piece of career I've built in. You know, so yeah, the more knowledgeable people you see in the field, the more you know that you still need to know much and much and much and more and more.
Yeah, well, if it, like the connectivists say, if you develop your networks, you can get there. You can get knowledge from your network, even if it's not from the person who has it. It could be from someone who's talked to the person who has it. But anyway,
yeah,
the knowledge is there in the network, and the wider your network is, the more you're able to access that knowledge when you need it. So.
And you talked about modeling and things, and you are but truly a role model, I mean, for us. And the same thing when it comes to also Mike, we learn a lot from you, and we just need to put that into more practices. So thank you very much for taking the time to be with us.
I know pleasure.
It was last minute, no, but it was really great, and it's highly appreciated.
Okay, well, thank you very much. I appreciate your having me at this you know, sort of an add-on, but I really appreciate your including me. So that's very nice of you.
You're honored, and looking forward to seeing you in other conferences.
Okay, sure. All right. Well, thank you very much. Okay. Thanks, Benjamin. It was your voice that made the connection. I knew that voice. Yeah. And then I knew the smile. Okay. So cool.
Hey, thank you very much. Thank you, Vance. Thanks, everyone.
Yeah. Thank you, Mike. Okay. All right.